Peter, you showed the data showing that it does predict in larger tumors, but I guess psychologically you see a 2.5 centimeter, 3 centimeter node negative tumor, you get nervous about not using chemotherapy.
I think that that's certainly right. Everyone has their cutoffs for where conflicting data is so strong that they're not necessarily willing to totally accept the result. I think right now that the way these tests are going to be used is they're going to be used in combination with classical information. Now, I've collaborated with John Bryant and Soon Paik, and we've actually compared the two tests in some of their data, and both are independently predictive. And that doesn't surprise me a bit. First of all, 16 genes is unlikely to subsume everything you might find out from pathology. And the other is that we know that once a tumor reaches macro size so you can see it, its signature doesn't change very much as it changes from 1 centimeter to 4 centimeters. But we know that that process takes a period of time, and during that time, it presumably is shedding some cells. And so that it won't surprise me to find that as the studies get bigger, you can see this already in some of the NSABP's work, that classical factors are also independently predictive as well as the Oncotype DX test. So I don't think that this is a question of either or. I think this test has very, very powerful positive elements. It's very reproducible. It combines a number of factors, some of which we're probably not taking into account. And it has that over classical information.
Antonio?
I think both the NSABP and the Genomic Health should definitely be commended for the beautiful work that they have done in terms of going back, doing a prospective validation, but using retrospective data in a very nice, sequential, and defensible manner. And hopefully some of the issues related to the stability of the assay for the individual patients will be addressed by the TAILORx study, specifically for the low-risk group that will not be treated with chemotherapy, receive hormonal therapy, and the high-risk group with chemotherapy, and we'll get a sense of what's happening with them. I think the key issue of the Oncotype DX is, like any other test we have in clinic, you should essentially order a test if you're going to do something with that specific information. And the issue is, will you respect the results of the test and proceed accordingly? In my institution, we have essentially requested that the Oncotype DX only be ordered by the medical oncologist if it's going to help us make a decision with the patient. If the patient's coming into the office saying, I want chemotherapy regardless, or there is no way you're going to give chemotherapy, I don't need the Oncotype DX to add to the information. One of the issues that we also deal with is the reliability in some specific patient groups. And one personal anecdote that I have recently was actually a woman who came in with the results of the Oncotype DX in hand for a second opinion. She had already seen two other medical oncologists and got the Oncotype DX herself. And so what she had was a tubular cancer, 0.6 centimeters, ER 100% HER2 negative. And she brought me the results of the Oncotype DX, and I actually, even before I saw the results, I would have said, I actually don't need to order the Oncotype DX for you because I'm going to expect, if the results are valid, that this is going to show a low recurrence score. You're someone who's going to be triggered with endocrine therapy alone, and you're not going to have chemotherapy. And actually, she had a recurrence score of 35. And what that told me was that essentially, I'm not sure I could believe the result of that Oncotype DX, and I told her so. And if you go back to the NSABP validation, if I remember correctly, only about 14% out of those 650 patients were tumors less than a centimeter. So you're talking about 50 or 70 patients with tumors less than 1 centimeter split across all three groups. So I have no idea whether the assay results do apply to that specific tumor in hand. So you have to be very careful if you order a test, whether the patient that you have applies to the patient group. And one final comment, it is actually amazing that it has taken us that long, and it has taken us the Herceptin data, for us to truly realize what a poor job we do nationally with ERPR and tumor grade, etc. And the Oncotype DX could, to some extent, be an expensive way to normalize the variability. But perhaps in some institutions, in some organizations, this may not be necessary. And my personal experience has been so far, every single Oncotype DX assay I have ordered has come back intermediate group. So it tells me that I either have very high quality, tumor grade and high quality ERPR in my institution, and I can't figure out exactly who's going to be high risk and low risk, or is pure a play of numbers and chance.
Craig, any thoughts?
We all think we're very good at estimating risk, but I do believe that that may not be entirely correct, because we tend to weigh one, even one out of multiple good factors, one bad factor, disproportionately. And I think it's too bad that we have not yet done a study where we test our ability prospectively, so that we find out whether, in fact, we're as good at calculating the risk as we think we are. I suspect we may not be, particularly if you take a broad range of people in different practice settings. And secondly, if we found that, in fact, we weren't as good as we are, and that it resulted in a better distribution of the appropriate therapies for the appropriate patients, the cost of the test might be more than outweighed by the appropriate use of therapies, sometimes not using therapies that are expensive, but most importantly, getting better outcomes. So that's the study that hasn't been done, I think is critical, and we should be doing.